O Lord, take our minds and think through them. Take our lips and speak through them. And take our hearts and set them on fire. Amen. Please be seated. In case there's anyone here who I haven't met yet, I'm Mother Megan, and for the past 21 months, I have had the absolute pleasure of serving Trinity as the Associate Rector for Children and Families. And since the start of this school year, I have also served as the Chaplain of St. Richard's. I'd like to start by sharing a story from school. On Ash Wednesday, I got to visit all of the classrooms of the early childhood wing. And when I was in the pre-K classroom, which is ages 3 and 4, the littlest ones, their teacher, the fabulous Sarah Kilfoyle, began to share the significance of Ash Wednesday and Lent. She explained how during Lent, we give things up. And immediately, a light bulb went off on top of one of the kids' heads when they realized the potential of this spiritual practice. And they exclaimed proudly, "I'm giving up broccoli for Lent." Then, looking at Mrs. Kilfoyle and I expectantly, they were happy that pleasing us in this instance would be so enjoyable and easy. Of course, this response revealed that we needed to break down the explanation a little bit further, which is what is so wonderful about working with children. You have to examine your assumptions and get down to the essential building blocks of why we do what we do and what exactly it is that we believe. That child's misunderstanding made me really look at how do we choose what to give up for Lent? And why do I even have a Lenten spiritual practice? I started observing Lent as a child, giving up candy and sweets because an adult told me to. But now I keep a Lenten spiritual practice because I know what it will lead to. Meaningful Lenten spiritual practices, either additions or subtractions, make more space for God in our lives. Such practices can also be called asceticism. Please don't be afraid of that term. Asceticism is giving up something that you are attached to or adding a new practice that brings you closer to God or helps people. And it can lead to awareness that brings you closer to God's will, which is always better than our own. Lenten spiritual practices are like that mud and spit that Jesus spreads over the blind man's eyes. They help us see, and in seeing, our lives are changed. First, to address the question of how we choose a Lenten spiritual practice, I'll share insights from two theologians who have written extensively on finding freedom from attachments. Then we'll look at what they and one additional spiritual leader has to say about the benefits of asceticism in one's life. Richard Rohr, a Franciscan priest, has written several books, including Breathing Underwater, Spirituality, and the 12 Steps. Gerald May is the author who wrote Addiction and Grace, which a small group of us have been reading at Trinity over the last year. Both theologians suggest that everyone has attachments that interfere with our connection to the divine within us and around us. Some of us have substance addictions, while others may be attached to control, busyness, or a way of thinking. The question is, what spiritual practice could loosen the grip of that attachment and provide a little space for grace to slip in? An honest appraisal is key because we don't want to choose to give something up that is actually good for us, like broccoli, but we also don't want to do something that feeds behavior that is blocking us from God. One cunning example could be ascetic practice itself, more commonly known as perfectionism. Gerald May shows how asceticism, when observed in the extreme, can become a form of attachment. He uses an example from the Pharisees, not unlike those in the gospel story we heard today, who become so attached to the religious rules that they lose sight of God and hurt people in the process. In the story we heard today, the Pharisees are not able to see clearly that Jesus is the Christ because they can't get past the fact that he did not keep the Sabbath in the way that they thought that he should. Another way that attachment can fly under the radar is when it is endorsed by society as a whole. Richard Rohr claims that all societies are addicted to themselves and create deep codependency on them. The attachments of society, Rohr says, are hardest to heal because they do not look like addictions, because we have all agreed to be compulsive about the same things and blind to the same problems. This, for example, could be society's dependence on fossil fuel. It's so pervasive that it's hard to even imagine another way of being. The confusion that arises in today's gospel story is a perfect example of lack of awareness growing out of unspoken, agreed upon attachments in society, attachments that Jesus challenges with his actions. To give some context, the center of society in first century Palestine was the temple. Everything centered around the temple. Religion, economics, even healing or cleansing. To be healed and ritually purified, you would need to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem where the temple was. Expensive. Then you would need to purchase all of the items needed for the sacrifice by your particular condition. Expensive. Finally, you would need to bring those items to the priests in the temple, who would eventually keep those items for their own consumption. When Jesus broke through all of those assumptions, when he, who is not a high priest, picked up dust from the ground on the Sabbath to heal a man who did not jump through a bunch of hoops to earn that healing, he caused a disruption. Jesus healed anyone freely, even a beggar, outside of the temple, on the Sabbath, without payment. Such behavior sheds light on society's attachment to religious rules, hierarchies, and assumptions. For some, it brings about confusion. For a few, it brought clarity. Clarity comes when we are willing to let go of our attachments. Just a little bit. God needs a crack, a sliver, a small window of opportunity, like a Lenten spiritual practice. And so now we are at the benefits of asceticism. Gerald May describes asceticism as our willingness to enter into life without our attachments, to commit ourselves to struggle with attachment, to participate in courtship with grace. To participate in courtship with grace. He suggests that when we make the effort to wrestle with our attachments, we make space for God's grace. It does not need to be extreme. In fact, it's better if it isn't. The best kind of Lenten or ascetic practice, he writes, affirms authentic life in grace, nourishes joy and freedom in the spaciousness of God's love, and enhances authentic passion to the very limits of our capacity to bear it. Because when we abstain from our attachments, anything from candy to gossip, it leaves an emptiness that God fills in. We are left with God. We are left with a deeper awareness of God's will for us. What our hearts truly desire is revealed under our attachments, habits, and compulsions, under our self-driven indulgences. We can see what will truly bring us peace, joy, and serenity. The third theologian I'll cite today is Joan Chittister. She's a Benedictine nun who has also written several books. A mystic, like Richard Rohr, she speaks of spirituality in a practical way. She points out how asceticism in Lent can increase our dependence on God rather than ourselves. It enables us to more effectively seek God's will rather than our own. She explains how, alternatively, self-gratification and self-centeredness puts us in the driver's seat. Self-authorization, she writes, makes us our own God. And that is a small God indeed. Through asceticism or Lenten spiritual practices, we make space for God, whose will is more than we could ever ask for or imagine. It has been my experience that God can imagine for me more than I could ever ask for. And it does just so happen that it is often during Lent when new awarenesses come, and when God's will opens doors I would never have thought even existed. The spiritual practices we keep in Lent create fertile ground for God's will to take root and for our eyes to be open to their potential. Now, I'd like to close with a personal story from my Lenten experience. Exactly 2 years and 1 week ago, I was in New York City for my ordination to the diaconate when a priest I knew said she had a friend looking for an associate rector in Indianapolis. "What church?" I asked. "Trinity," she said. I got goosebumps because I knew Trinity, thanks to Bill Coleman talking it up for the past few years. And so I knew it was a great place. And my experience here has been more than I could have ever asked for or imagined. Here at Trinity and at St. Richard's, my eyes have been opened to the joy of living life as a member of the priesthood. I've loved participating in our traditional liturgy. Thank you for letting me, I'm looking for Michael, thank you for letting me learn to chant with you. Michael taught me that. I've witnessed what it is like to be part of a parish that thoroughly supports children's ministry. Thank you for being so patient with me with all the noise and chaos that I stir up. In all of you, I've been so inspired by your excellence and beauty, compassion, creativity, and passion for justice. I have felt your warm Hoosier hospitality, your generosity and support every step of the way, and love, so much love. Thank you for the grace that you have shown me and continue to show me. Although my stay here feels truncated, I could not imagine a better place to have entered and learned to embody the priesthood. And I cannot thank you enough. Amen.